by location, raising people from the dead, healing the blind, healing the deaf, power over the weather. These are some of the miracles that have been attributed to the intercession of Father Nelson Baker. My name is John Kerner, and my book is The Mysteries of Father Baker. This afternoon, I'd like to talk to you about Father Baker and about my background as well, and some of the miracles that have been attributed to Father Nelson Baker during life and even after his death. Now, to begin with, just give you a little bit about my background. As I said, my name is John Kerner. I have a master's degree in American history, and I'm a college professor at Niagara County College in Western New York. I teach American history. So the book that I've written looks at supernatural from a historian standpoint, from a journalist standpoint. I also spent several years as a journalist here in Western New York. So the book that I've researched and written is about the miracles of Father Nelson Baker, the perspective of a journalist and a historian. Try to look at these miracles from an objective viewpoint and let the reader judge for themselves the truth or as a non-truth of each miracle. Well, let's get into a bit about who Father Baker was. Right now, Father Nelson Baker, is on the path to sainthood. And if he becomes a saint, he will be the first American-born male saint in the Catholic Church. Right now, he is at level one in the canonization process. And we'll get into that a little bit later on when we get into some specific examples of his miracles. But just as an introductory piece on Baker, the most important thing to remember is that he is now on the path to sainthood in the Catholic Church. And if he makes it, he'll be the first American-born male saint. In order to set up miracles attributed to Father Baker, and I mentioned some of these include raising people from the dead by location, healing the blind and the deaf, power over the weather. In order to set these up, I think the best way to go about this is to look at this man's life. I assume that many people outside of Western New York may not be familiar with Father Baker, although he was a national figure. His notoriety has decreased over the years. Father Baker was born in 1841. Some records indicate he may have been two, but either year, 1841 or 1842, and he died in 1936. He basically was the most well-renowned humanitarian of the early 20th century. He was quite famous in the United States. In fact, he was acquainted with President Calvin Coolidge and President Franklin Roosevelt. Roosevelt, of course, was governor of New York, and Baker was connected with Roosevelt when he was governor of New York because Father Baker did his ministry throughout New York State, based out of Buffalo, New York, though. So Baker was connected with two presidents during his life and renowned by several popes. So he was quite a well-known man during his lifetime. Father Baker, during his life, basically was most well known for caring for orphan boys. He built a vast variety of institutions outside of Buffalo in Lackawanna, New York, to care for orphan boys. He also cared for unwed mothers and basically anyone on the edges of society that needed help. It was estimated that at the end of his life, he literally helped care for millions of people during his 95-year life. In order to set up his life, though, I think it's easiest to identify him as a holy man, looking at the fact that his life compares very easily to a lot of other sainted men and women of the Catholic Church, many of which were also miracle workers in their own right. For example, Father Baker's life is very similar to another reputed mystic, who we all know as Pope John Paul II. Pope John Paul II is on the fast track to sainthood now after his death earlier this year. And very quickly after he died, there were stories of him healing people. two stories came out from his ministry in the 1970s of him healing people that had diseases. So another reputed miracle worker, in this case, Pope Paul II, has a lot of similarities to Nelson Baker. Well, what are they? The first one to point to that, interestingly enough, both men served in the military. In fact, and they served in the most prominent war of each person's generation. Father Baker served in Gettysburg in the Civil War. Pope John Paul II was a World War II veteran. Both men also had this multilingual ability. Father Baker could speak fluent German, he could speak fluent Latin, he could speak fluent Spanish and fluent English. Pope John Paul II, of course, could speak many different languages, most of the European languages. Both men also were actors, singers, and musicians in their lives. Not very well known, but Pope John Paul II did cut a folk album in the 1970s. He was very proficient on the guitar. Same thing with Nelson Baker. Both men, actors, singers, and musicians. And both men had an intense devotion to the Blessed Virgin Mary. In Father Baker's case, he would say that the miracles attributed to him were through the intercession of the Blessed Virgin Mary under her title, Our Lady of Victory. And we'll get into that a little bit later. So a lot of strong similarities between Baker and Pope John Paul II. But that's not it. There's a lot of other saints and holy people that he's very similar to. Baker's early life is dominated by a sort of materialistic early life. He was a businessman in the feed and grain business in Buffalo, New York. And you see this a lot with holy people. St. Augustine, St. Francis, St. Ignatius of Loyola. Lots of saints start off in the material world, and then only later on do they, you know, get their real vocation in life. And it's the same thing with Baker. He doesn't get into the seminary until he's 28 years old, and he doesn't get out of the seminary until he's 35. Baker doesn't become a priest until he's 35 years old. So he spends 7 years in the seminary training to become a Catholic priest. Well, what made him have this change of heart? I think there's one instance that you can point to in his life that really turns his life around. So when he's 28 years old, all of a sudden, Nelson Baker decides to take a mysterious trip around the Great Lakes to be alone. He goes to all of the major Great Lakes cities, goes to Milwaukee, Chicago, anything around the Great Lakes where there's shrines, churches, places where he can reflect and pray. He leaves his business, he leaves his family, and he goes to be alone. I think it's at this point in his life that he realizes that he has a special gift. I think it's at this point that he realizes that he has the ability to be a miracle worker. He gets into the seminary as soon as he gets back from this trip and spends 7 years studying to be a priest. While he's in the seminary, a single event happens, which I think is essential to understanding him as a miracle worker. He gets struck down with horrible, debilitating skin disease. Skin disease, pretty much into very well known today because it's been wiped out because of antibiotics. But in the 1970s, when Baker was in the seminary, this disease killed everyone in its path. It's called erysipelas. And this disease was pretty much a death sentence. If you got this disease, you died. This disease was typified by lesions all over someone's body. You'd get it even anywhere. On your face, arms, legs, genitals, ever. And he had it bad. He had the worst form of this disease. Some of the reports I dig up in the book from times close to when he got the disease, and they say that everyone who got the disease in the year nearby when he did, they all died. 21 people got the disease in Buffalo. 21 died in a year very close to when he got it. Big writes about this in his journal and thanks God personally for sparing him from dying. The reason I bring this up is that later on in his life, there are countless examples of Father Baker healing people with skin diseases, skin problems. And this gets to a larger question that I want to bring up this time, that really kind of fascinates me about the study of the miraculous. And the question is this: when does a human being attain supernatural power? Or a similar question is, how does a human being attain supernatural power? In Nelson Baker's case, he was obviously biologically like any one of us. What is it then that makes a human being supernatural in their abilities? It's got to be something. Well, if you look throughout history and you look at some of the reputed miracle workers, you know, obviously there's an intense holiness there. But throughout time, there have been people who have been intensely holy and have not been able to perform miracles. Just take your local parish priest, for example. Intensely holy people, but in most cases, not miracle workers. So what was it with Nelson Baker? I think in his case, you have to look to the fact that he experienced this episode of personal, physical suffering. And I think that's a key element to understanding how he attained supernatural ability. I think you can definitely say that someone who has been taken through intense periods of suffering and is healed, they need to understand what it is to suffer and then be healed in order to understand what it means to heal another human being. And there's many examples of this throughout the Catholic religion. People who have gone through a life of physical suffering and then have turned that around to become miracle workers. Padre Pio is an example of this, the Italian mystic who died in 1968. Pio spent at least 50 years with the stigmata, the five wounds of the crucified Christ, bleeding from his hands, his side, and his feet. And this hurt. This was physical suffering on his part. But yet he was a very gifted miracle worker, performing many miracles of healing and bilocation. That's just one example. Another example is Bernadette of Lourdes. Now, this is a very sickly girl who basically suffered her whole life with debilitating asthma and many other diseases. She only lived into her 30s, but again, there's at least, I believe the number now is 68 miracles that have been attributed to her. Of course, she's the girl that the Blessed Virgin Mary was said to appear to in Lourdes, France. So you have a number of examples that have happened throughout history where people suffer and then they become miracle workers. I think with Baker, this is a key thing with him, understanding his life as a miracle worker. A couple of examples of skin-related miracles with him, just to sort of prove the point. In 1892, Nelson Baker was responsible for discovering a gas well on the parish grounds where he was a priest at St. Patrick's Parish in Lackawanna. During the discovery of the well, one of the gas wells exploded, severely burned three young boys who were standing nearby. And it was reported in the local papers that they were going to die. Nelson Baker visited the home of all three boys and prayed over them. And after a short time, the boys not only recovered, but all of the skin burning on their bodies was completely healed. This story was corroborated by two separate accounts that I was able to bring up in the book and point out. And one of which was a local news report of the Buffalo Morning Express noted this in their editions. And another one was interviews conducted by the researcher from the 1960s, Floyd Anderson. These accounts, Baker healing people of skin diseases, continued long after his life as well. And people continued to pray to him for help in this matter. While I'm on the subject, Baker's personal suffering. Later in his life, in his 80s, Baker loses one of his eyes after a long battle with what probably were cataracts, and he had to have one of the eyes removed. Again, personal physical suffering on his part. Well, guess what? during his life and after his death, lots of people attributed his help in the area of eye-related miracles too. People being cured of blindness and other such miracles. I'll give you an example. There was a steel worker from the Buffalo area who worked at Temp Steel who had a piece of steel lodged in his eye, and he decided to ask for Nelson Baker's help. The doctors said they would have to remove the eye. There was just nothing that they could do. Well, this actually happened after Baker died, and the man decided to conduct what's called a novena. It's a 9-day prayer session, and Baker was well known to do these through during his lifetime. So the man goes to Our Lady of Victory and prays at the church. This is Our Lady of Victory, is the church where Father Baker did his ministry. And he prays for 9 straight days, does a novena. And just think of this, 9 days with a piece of steel in your eye. At the end of the days, and the testimony that I put out in the book, his wife testifies, and he does too. This was recorded in the Buffalo Diocesan Archives, where I did most of my research, that the eye being perfectly normal, well, and natural. That's the exact quote. And the piece of steel came out and the eye healed. So these are two examples of Baker's healing ability that are directly related to events in his life. Now, the larger point is, how does a human being attain supernatural power? In short, I think it has to do with the personal physical suffering of the people involved. Now, moving on to a different area, another question that comes up when people think about the miraculous is, well, when does a human being attain supernatural power? How young are they? When does it happen? And by the way, at this point, let me just refresh anyone's memory. My name is John Kerner, and I'm talking about the book, The Mysteries of Father Baker. And you can get more information about the book at www.buffalobooks.com. That's buffalobooks.com. You can also order the book there if you'd like. Or if you'd like to send me an email to ask questions about the book, or if you need more information about ordering it, you could email me at bakermysteries@yahoo.com. That's one word, bakermysteries@yahoo.com. And the website, once again, was buffalobooks.com. And I'll repeat that later. Anyway, the question I was bringing up was, when does a human being attain supernatural power? Well, in Baker's case, the earliest miracles that I could dig up were from his time in Corning, New York, when he was 39 years old. And this is only 4 years after he was after he became a priest. About, so maybe, 9-10 years after he was hit with that skin disease. So Baker is transferred to Corning, actually, after spending a few years in the Buffalo area. After he was ordained, he was sent to St. Patrick's Parish, and felt that he had done all that he could there. The finances there were very bad. He wanted to transfer. So the bishop said, okay, we'll transfer you. There's an opening in Corning, so we'll send you there. So Baker goes to Corning, 39, and he gets there in 1881, in February, perhaps January, 1881. And he stayed till perhaps February or March, 1882. Records are a little sketchy. That's the best we can do in terms of nailing down the exact date. He's there about 13 months. So what happens when he's there? A lot of things happen. And the things that happen there, I think, tell us some of the most important things that we can know about him as a miracle worker. I think, obviously, first of all, it tells us that Baker could perform miracles at an early age. There's at least 6 miracles that took place while he was in Corning in just the span of 1 year. And I point all these out in the book and go into them in detail, but I'll just sort of overview a few of them now. One of the miracles there happened just outside St. Mary's Parish, which was the parish there. There was a lady that had died in the snow outside of the church. And someone came upon this dead woman and went over to get Nelson Baker at St. Mary's Church to try to help. The baker comes on the scene, the woman's dead, and takes a handful of snow, melts it in his hands, blesses the woman with the snow, and she comes back to life. And this, again, testimony that was obtained from, in this case, the Rochester Diocesan Archivist. His name is Reverend Robert McNamara. He actually was a Corningite, and he actually provided yet another miracle from Corning, this one happening to his Aunt Kate. He said his Aunt Kate had typhoid fever, and Father Baker blessed her personally, and she recovered from the disease. And firsthand testimony in that case from Reverend McNamara and Kate. So Baker is doing all different types of miracles when he's in Corning. There's a healing of typhoid fever. There's another miracle where he heals someone of a kidney ailment. And yet another one, as I said, of raising someone from the dead. So I think this also gives us some insight into Baker. Baker could do different types of miracles, not just one type, different types. And he performed miracles in different ways. In one case, where there was a man with kidney disease, he went to the man's home. He took a glass of water. Baker stirred the glass of water with his finger and then asked the man to drink it. The man drank the water, and he was healed of the disease. He never had any problem after that. In another case, as I said, he used some melting snow. In another case, he simply healed Reverend McNamara's Aunt Kate with his hands. So Baker could heal people in different types of ways, and he did different type of miracles, and he could do it at a young age. I think the most important thing, though, about this are two other points. One, Baker could perform miracles anywhere, not just in the Buffalo area. I think the Corning miracles demonstrate that his ability wasn't tied to a specific geographical location. And finally, most importantly, his time in Corning tells us that he must have already had a reputation for performing miracles that he brought with him there. Otherwise, why would people be coming to ask for his help in the case of the woman in the snow? I mean, here's a priest who just got here, you know, weeks earlier. Why would you go to St. Mary's Parish and ask for the assistant pastor? Baker was only assistant pastor. Why not ask for the pastor? Better yet, why not ask for a doctor? But no, these people were going to him, specifically seeking out his help. So that tells me that Baker must have had a reputation for performing miracles even before he came to Corning. He must have brought that with him. So even before he's 39, he must have been known to perform miracles. I think that's something you can definitely logically conclude from these miraculous stories in Corning. And keep in mind, 5 or 6 stories from 1 year's time, that might just be the tip of the iceberg from what he did when he was there. I think the time in Corning is a wealth of information from just 1 year of work there. Now, one of the miracles that I pointed out was the story of him raising someone from the dead. This one is something that can connect us to another miracle that he does. It'll bring us to a larger point. The larger point is that a lot of Baker's miracles, such as the raising the woman from the dead, they imitate miracles worked by Christ. And I think Baker does this deliberately because he had an intense connection to Jesus, not only to the Blessed Virgin Mary. And I think he definitely, in his miracle working, specifically imitated Christ in the way he went about performing miracles. And another story of him raising someone from the dead. In fact, one of the most well-documented ones in the book, and again, the book is The Mysteries of Father Baker, books.com. The story goes like this. Baker was, well, to back up a bit, Baker was responsible for building a hospital on the grounds of the orphanages that he helped run, that he did run, in Lackawanna, New York. The hospital was appropriately named Our Lady of Victory Hospital. The hospital a woman named Miss Clark, one of the nurses there. She unfortunately died at the hospital, and she was pronounced dead. The doctors put the sheet over her. And at this point in time, according to witnesses, Baker appeared in the doorway. He wasn't called for. He just simply appeared in the door. He enters the room. He sees that the sheet is over Miss Clark's body. So he does a couple things. First of all, he asks everyone in the room to join hands and form a circle around the bed. And then he asks them all to kneel. At this point, he asks them all to join him in saying the rosary. Now, anyone who's ever said the rosary knows that it takes at least 20 minutes to complete the rosary. And if you're saying the rosary in a group, it usually takes even longer because one person is the leader and they say half of a prayer and then there's a pause and the other group says another half of the prayer. So it takes a good deal of time. So at the end of this rosary, which is now at least 20 minutes after this woman has died, at least 20 minutes, Baker stands up, asks everyone to stand, and then asks the attending nurse to take the pulse of Miss Clark. And she does this, and she finds that Miss Clark is now alive, and that Miss Clark now can sit up and talk. At this point, Baker leaves the room. Doesn't say anything, just leaves the room, and Miss Clark goes on to live many, many more years of her life. She was only a young woman in her 20s at the time. And in fact, this story, as I said, is one of the most well-documented ones. This was mentioned in 1960 biography of Father Baker, a real short one done by Floyd Anderson. However, for my book, I was able to find an unpublished interview with this woman conducted in the early 1930s by a man named Reverend Cormacant from St. Anne's Parish here in Buffalo. He interviewed this woman directly, got her testimony, checked out her background, and recounted the story in an unpublished interview tucked away in the Buffalo Diocesan Archives. After the interview, in his side note to the interview, Cormacant says that after talking to this girl, he said that he never felt closer to the supernatural than looking into her eyes and listening to the story. So this really is one of the best ones, most documented ones. And it points out that Baker has this similarity to Christ in the miracles that he performed. And this isn't the only case. This isn't the only one. Another very well-known miracle performed by Christ was Jesus' calming of the storm at sea, the calming of the storm on the Sea of Galilee. And Baker has one of these in his repertoire as well. And this one, in order to explain it, I just wanted to kind of get into the background of it a bit because it will serve to point out how I went about getting the sources for the book. Now, I had heard in the area, obviously Baker is in the Buffalo area, he's a very well-known figure. His legend is known far and wide around here. So I had heard through the grapevine, through another paranormal researcher up here, that he had performed a miracle of having power over the weather. Well, obviously, for the standards that I tried to bring to the book, I didn't want to just put rumors in there, but I wanted to deal with facts, with real sources. So I asked him where he heard the story from. He said that he had heard this story from a professor at Buffalo State College. And I went to this professor at Buff State, and she told me that she had got the story from one of her grad students who had been doing research on Baker. And I said, well, can I talk to this grad student? She said, sure, and she put me in touch with her. So I went to the grad student, and I asked where she had got the story from. And this grad student was a Catholic nun. Her name was Sister Renee Roberto. And she had done, again, unpublished research on Father Baker when she was a grad student. She said she got this story from two other Catholic nuns. These two nuns who gave her the story, I wanted to interview, obviously. But unfortunately, that was the end of the line for me because the two nuns who she interviewed had passed away, one in the 90s, one in the 80s. So I obviously couldn't interview them. But Sister Renee had taken some extensive notes about this interview and about this story. And I asked her if I could publish it in my book, and she said absolutely. So here's what she told me. Well, first of all, the two nuns were, I looked into their background, and they were two highly respected, highly educated Catholic nuns who gave her this story. One was Sister Maureen Healy, and the other one was Sister Mary Xavier Hefner. They were two teachers in the area. Both had college degrees and very well-loved, well-respected members of the Buffalo Catholic community. So these were, you know, pretty much gold sources for a historian. When you get witnesses that are that credible, you really can't deny the research. Here's what they told her. They told her that they were on a boat with Nelson Baker. They were on a boat also with, Baker was with several Catholic nuns in the diocese. So Baker was taking out several of the nuns on a boat trip, and Hefner and Healy were among the nuns. On trip, a very dangerous storm rose up, which was threatening the lives of everyone on the ship, including Father Baker. The storm was extremely violent. There was lightning and thunder, heavy sheets of rain. That was one of the problems they had. The other one was that the boat that they were on, it was sinking. There was a leak in the boat. So there were two problems that the boat trip had. So at this point, the two nuns say that Father Baker did a couple things. First of all, he asked everyone to calm down. And secondly, he went to the front of the boat and raised his hands to heaven and began to pray. At this point, the nuns say that two things happened. First of all, they say that the storm, which, as I said, included lightning, thunder, and heavy sheets of rain, the storm immediately stopped. And secondly, they said the leak on the boat sealed itself, and the boat stopped leaking. And everyone on the ship was saved. This story, as I mentioned, is almost exactly what happened on the Sea of Galilee. In that case, the apostles were on a ship. A violent storm rose up. They asked Jesus to pray. Jesus prays, the storm stops, and the leak on the seals itself, and everyone is saved. It's exactly what happened with Baker here with the nuns from the diocese. And as I said, the nuns who gave this story could not have been any more credible. These were the most credible nuns in the whole diocese who gave this story. And this has to be one of the most spectacular miracles that I have ever heard of. Certainly the most spectacular miracle that Baker performed. Power over the weather. Raising his hands, the storm stops, and the leak on the boat seals itself. The next miracle that I want to mention, and this will sort of bring us down towards the end of my lecture here, is a miracle that kind of brings us up to date with Father Baker and his canonization process. And this will get us into some final points I want to make about the man and about his cause in general. In 1999, this is now 63 years after Baker died, the Vatican recommended that Our Lady of Victory Parish move Baker's body to Our Lady of Victory Basilica, which was the large church that Baker built when he was in his late 80s. This is a magnificent church, by the way. It's one of the most spectacular churches in all of Western New York, dedicated to Our Lady of Victory. So the Vatican recommends that Baker's body get moved from Holy Cross Cemetery to Our Lady of Victory Basilica so that more people could learn about him and pray to him, and hopefully that would move his cause along for sainthood. Well, when they moved his body, they found that on top of his body was a box. And in that box were three vials of blood that were his blood that were taken out when he died in 1936. When he died in 1936, there was a man in the room named Joseph Burke, who later became a bishop of Buffalo. Burke was in the room, and he said that instead of throwing out Baker's blood, which was always done when people died in the 30s, they threw it out into the nearest toilet. and I'm sure that's what they do today. I don't really know, but that's definitely what was done in the 30s. The blood was discarded. So Burke says, instead of throwing the blood out, let's save it. It'll be more respectful. Let's put it in 3 glass jars and bury it on top of his coffin. So this was done, and when they exhumed the body 63 years later, they found that all of these 3 vials of blood, they were all still fluid. And they were all still filled to the top. None of it had evaporated. Well, immediately, OLV Parrish thought, well, perhaps this could be a miracle that we could use to bring him to beatification. Well, this brings the question. Are 3 vials of blood that still remain liquid after 63 years, is that miraculous? The short answer to that is yes. That cannot be explained scientifically, and here's why. When they took the jars out, they submitted the blood to several tests. One was done at Our Lady Victory Hospital, and the test done there, and actually the test also done by the Vatican. The Vatican also did their own tests. Each independent test came up with 2 results. They both said they couldn't explain the fluidity of the blood. The blood should not have been fluid. Not only that, it shouldn't have been there. It should have evaporated. And here's the most spectacular part about it. The blood still was behaving as if it was inside of a human body. The red blood cells, the white blood cells, the lymphocytes, the platelets, everything in blood was still there, and it was still moving around and active. It was still behaving as if it was in a human body. It had not deteriorated in any way. And this could not be explained by the Vatican, and it could not be explained by Our Lady Victory Hospital. And the interviews I did with the, with the people who exhumed the body from the local funeral home, in their experience, they have never seen blood that stayed liquid for that long either. So this is something that could not be explained scientifically. Well, OLB, Our Lady Victory Parish, submitted this for consideration for moving Baker's cause from servant of God level to beatification level. Right now, Baker's at stage 1, servant of God. So they needed a miracle. This is a requirement. You need a miracle to move up to beatification. A miracle that happened after the candidate died. So the Vatican said 2 things. They said, we can't explain this scientifically, but we're not going to accept it as a miracle. And they didn't give explanation as to why they didn't, which is typical with the Vatican. But according to the research I did, I came up with 2 reasons why they didn't. One is that when it comes to miracles of what are called incorruptibility, which is what this falls under the category of, and I'll explain that just briefly. Incorruptibility is the idea that a body resists decomposition, and there are several examples of this throughout Catholic Church history where a body has resisted decomposition. Well, in these cases, the Vatican says that the body be 100% incorruptible. Not just the blood, not just a piece of the body, such as an arm or a leg or something like that. The entire body has to be 100% clean, I guess you could say. And in this case, it was just the blood. In fact, they really couldn't use Baker's body because when Father Baker died at nearing the age of 96, his body had, he was actually 95, but close to 96, his body had pretty much been deteriorated already. So even if they opened it up and found that it was still at the stage of when he died, they wouldn't have accepted that anyway because he had already been deteriorated when he died anyway. And besides that, the parish didn't open up the coffin to see how he looked. And they had reburied him already. So they were stuck with blood, and they were stuck with a non-100% miracle. That's one thing that was a problem, why they rejected it. The second thing, that miracles of incorruptibility were, and still are, becoming out of vogue in the Catholic Church. The reason for this is that in the 1980s and 1990s, the Church owed incorruptible bodies, such as St. Teresa of Avila, a lot of other ones that have been said to be incorruptible. They allowed a lot of these bodies to be subject to scientific investigation. After these investigations, the scientists said that in some cases, not all, but in some cases, these bodies had been put through various stages of preservation. They'd been stitched together, they'd been embalmed, and they said that was the reason why they had been incorruptible. Now, this doesn't explain all of the incorruptible bodies, though. I mean, some they couldn't explain. I mean, St. Teresa of Avila, when she, when they exhumed her body, the smell of lilies, emanated from her coffin. And that also accompanies miracles of incorruptibility. Those things can't explain. And some bodies they couldn't explain either. But some were scientifically, explicable. So, at this point, the Vatican has kind of a PR problem on their hands. So these miracles become out of vogue. And that hurts Baker here. Because not only is the miracle not 100%, but it's also sort of not in vogue anymore for the Vatican to consider it anyway. So two strikes against Baker and he's out, in terms of this miracle anyway. But still, you can't explain the blood. It shouldn't take away from the fact that this blood was liquid, it didn't evaporate, and it was behaving like it was inside a human body. Those three things cannot be explained scientifically. As I said, I wanted to use this miracle, and I point all this out in the book, as an effort to bring up a larger point. And just to refresh your memory, my name is John Kerner. I'm talking about the mysteries of Father Baker. Just came out 2005 by Western New York Wares. And if you're interested in the book, you can read a little more about it or order it at www.buffalobooks.com. That's BUFFALOBOOS, buffalobooks.com. And you can also email me if you'd like. I'm at bakermysteries@yahoo.com. That's BAKER. Mysteries, or BakerMysteries@yahoo.com. So, my larger point here is the canonization process in general. Now, Baker, as I said, has attained stage one for canonization, which is being named a servant of God. And candidates attain this stage basically through efforts of local parishes. And these parishes prove to the Vatican through any number of ways, investigations, witnesses, testimonies, that the canonate in question lived a life of heroic virtue. And this was very easily, this was very easy to demonstrate with Baker because he was a very, very well-known man in the area. Many people had firsthand testimony of how loving and caring and altruistic he was. So this was very easy. Very quickly, he was named a servant of God. Now, this happened in the early 90s, and, you know, 15 years later, he has not attained the beatification level. However, this is not in any way unusual in terms of Vatican time. It takes the Vatican a long time to move people from stage to stage. The next stage would be beatification, and Baker would need a miracle attributed to him after he died to attain beatification, and then yet another miracle, which would happen after beatification, to attain sainthood. Well, the question is, why can't we use some of the miracles that happened during Baker's life, some of the ones I mentioned earlier? Well, the Vatican needs miracles that happen after a person died, because they say that these miracles prove that the person is in heaven. This is Vatican theology. So therefore, they need these miracles that happen after death. Because, well, what is sainthood? Sainthood to the Catholic Church is saying that a person is in heaven. That's all it's saying. We definitely know this person is in heaven. And the evidence they use for that are miracles. Miracles of in heaven acting here on earth. Well, Father Baker is still acting here on earth. Well, 2 months ago. Let's see. No, actually, it'd be about 3 months ago. There was a Buffalo firefighter by the name of Donald Herbert. And the story actually gained a lot of national attention when it happened. It may have been 4 months ago. I may be mixing up dates. I apologize. This just recently happened. Let's just say a few months ago. In 1905, this man, Donald Herbert, he was fighting a fire in the Buffalo area, and as a result of his actions in that particular fire, he basically entered into a coma. and doctors have been debating what type of coma he was in. Was it a semi-responsive state like Terry Schiavo, or was it more of a responsive state, semi-coma? In any event, this man was in some sort of debilitative state. Just recently, this year, after 10 years, this man came out of the coma. And at one of my recent book signings, a member of the family came up to me at one of the signings and told me that every day for 10 years, this family was putting a piece of Father Baker's robe on the man's body in the hopes that he would recover from his coma. And finally, then, after 10 years, he recovers and wakes up and starts talking and recognizes all the members of his family and interacts and appears to be completely healed. He also thought it was just the day after the accident happened. He had no sense that 10 years had transpired. So Our Lady of Victory now is looking into using this miracle to bring Baker to beatification level. The picture of Father Baker in the room, the family was praying to Father Baker, and this happened at Father Baker Manor here in the Buffalo area. Okay, how can they use the miracle? This brings us into a larger point about what the Vatican uses for miraculous sort of qualifications, I guess you could say. When looking at any specific miracle, a miracle has to be 100% in nature. We mentioned this just recently about the incorruptibility miracle. Well, in this case, with Donald Herbert, you have to find out if he was completely healed. And if this has just happened and the family is going to be letting OLV to come in to investigate, so the first thing they're going to have to look at is if he was completely healed, 100% miracles. The second thing is that the Vatican is going to want to know if he stays healed. Miracles have to be permanent in the Vatican's eyes. If a person gets cancer and then the cancer goes away and someone wants to use this as a miracle, the Vatican is going to say, we're going to wait a number of years to see if that cancer comes back before we use it as a miracle. And they're going to probably do that in this case as well. That's why these processes take so much time, because the Vatican waits to see if miracles stay as healings and they don't go back, the person doesn't revert. A good case in point is that there was a boy in the area by the name of Joseph Donahue. He had a whole range of problems with his lungs, his kidneys, almost all of his interior organs. The doctor said he had no chance to live. In fact, his entire body turned ashen, and he had only hours to live. The family in question intervened. They prayed to Father Baker. They brought soil from Baker's grave. They brought a piece of Baker's robe put on the boy's body, and the boy recovered inexplicably. However, the surgeons had to amputate one of his toes and one of his feet. The problem with this, then, as we said earlier, is that the Vatican requires 100% miracles, so they couldn't use this as an example of Baker's intercession, even though the doctor said there was no way he could recover, and if there was a miracle, it had to be from Baker's exclusive intercession. So that's how the Vatican operates. It may seem unfortunate, but the Vatican is very strict. They have the reputation on the line, and it's going to be that case with the Donald Herbert story. They're also going to want to know if the family was directly praying to Father Baker. And it seems from the research I've conducted, just from, you know, what I've read in the local media reports and with my conversation with a family member, that they were, in fact, praying just to Father Baker. This is important because, well, let's say, for example, the family is praying to Baker and St. Jude. Well, theologically, the Vatican will say, we don't know if St. Jude intervened or if it was Father Baker, so they wouldn't be able to use that miracle. Very strict theological guidelines that govern miracles, and it's no different in this case. So we're going to have to see what happens with the Donald Herbert story. And this just sort of brings up yet another larger point, that Baker seems to be continuing to operate here in the local area. At yet another book signing I was at, I had a very wonderful discussion with a woman who is currently a Eucharist minister at Our Lady of Victory Parish and confided in me, and I'll leave the names out, of some recent miracles that have said to have taken place just within this past 12. It seems to be a very important year in Baker's canonization process. Things seem to be heating up. She said that she was in the sacristy, praying in front of Baker's portrait. All of a sudden, the smell of incense surrounds her. No source of incense, though, in the sacristy. Several other people come into the sacristy and notice it as well. And then the priest comes in, and he notices it. And they investigate, and there's no source for the incense, and it's just in front of Baker's portrait. The priest says to her that this has to be a miracle. Yet another miracle that is said to have taken place. There is a group of people at the Basilica who pray to Father Baker regularly. There's a prayer group there. One of the women, was having problems with her hearing. I think she was deaf in one ear, not both, but one ear. Praying to Baker was something that they did every single week. The woman, according to the testimony I got from the Eucharistic minister, says that Baker appeared to her in person at the Basilica and healed her by putting hands over her head, and that healed her hearing. This is something I caution you, I haven't had the time or the opportunity to search into, but it sort of gets into the fact that there's all these stories in the local folklore of Baker healing people. And I can say there is a miracle of Baker healing people of their hearing that happened during his life, which sort of lends some credence to the previous one. There were two women praying in the front pew of the Basilica. And one of the women approached Father Baker, asked him to put his hands over her head and to heal her deafness, which was in one of her ears. He did this, and according to the testimony from her and her friend, she regained her hearing. This was interviews that were conducted during his canonization search committee that was started when his process for canonization began in the early 90s. And the interview was again, tucked into the Gulf of Diocesan archives, and I was able to use it in the book. So, the point here being, there seems to continue to be working in the area. And I think that is something that will continue to happen, and people will continue to pray to him, especially with the newfound miracle that has been happening to, apparently happening to Donald Herbert. Well, that is the end of my presentation on Baker, and I just wanted to thank you all for listening. And at this point, I wanted to remind you, though, that if you're interested in the book, you can access information about the book at www.buffalobooks.com. And that is the website for my publisher, Western New York Wares. You can order the book there. Once again, that's buffalobooks.com. And if you want to ask me some questions about the book or questions about ordering, if you're having some trouble ordering on the website, feel free anytime to email me at bakermysteries@yahoo.com. Once again, that's Baker Mysteries, one word. That's B-A-K-E-R mysteries@yahoo.com. And I just want to thank you for listening, and please enjoy your time, and hopefully you can get a chance to read the book, and I look forward to hearing from any of you that are interested. Thank you very much.
You have been listening to a Blog In Broadcasting service, a service to others' endeavor. Thank you very much, and good night.